help here. Given the level difference, they wouldn't even notice them. I had to find a more elaborate solution, even if it happened to be dangerous to me as well. Quicksand. The principles behind this terrifying phenomenon were well known to me. All I had to do was to make sure that the developers had translated the same physical laws wholly and entirely into the game. It didn't turn out too difficult to create a loose area of sand saturated with air. All I needed was the sand and several free shadows of water and air. The water one would create a surface barrier that would keep the air in. My opponent wouldn't actually drown in this trap, but that's not what I needed anyway. I had to delay him. Plinto would do the rest, followed by a minor battle shadow. The heavy one didn't work for some reason.
"Meth, we can leave the shaman." Kaiten appeared out of stealth, touched the quicksand I'd created with the tip of his tail, and, even though his HP dropped by several points, began to chortle happily.
"The idiot has cornered himself with his dumb sand trap. Let's go get Plinto."
"Let's. This one's not going anywhere,"
the hunter replied with evident bloodthirst. He stepped back several paces and suddenly fired into the air. "Damn it all, I don't expect much of myself, but how did Plinto forget about this ability that hunters had? Flare Shot was an ability that revealed all hidden creatures in a radius of 40 meters.
"Plinto, come on out!"
Kaiten didn't bother going into stealth again, strolling demonstratively at the edge of the quicksand. It didn't cost that much mana to maintain it, so I didn't pass up on the opportunity to send a battle shadow into the rogue, keeping him on his toes.
"Oh, come on now!"
As soon as the first shadow reached Kaiten, his chortle broke into full-on laughter, while Methodius's tiger licked its lips, satiated. In some utterly baffling manner for an ordinary player, that is, me, the magical damage was channeled through the rogue to the hunter's pet, which, in turn, consumed this damage happily. He even licked his fangs and looked in my direction as if wondering whether there'd be more. The tiger was entirely immune to magic.
How am I supposed to play this game?
"What, my darling? Is this battle not working out for you?"
Kaiten managed to contain his laughter and, without waiting for Plinto to appear, began to make fun of me.
"You should try using that staff of yours. Go ahead. I won't even defend myself. Come on over and kill me. Oh, I'm begging you, oh great shaman. Have your way with us."
"It looks like they've wagered that they'll kill us during the last minute," Plinto whispered in my ear.
I had to force myself to keep from starting back in shock. The rogue's appearance was entirely unexpected.
"We can use that to our advantage," he went on. "How quickly can you dispel that quicksand?"
"Instantly," I replied without turning. Methodius went on shooting into the air, trying to illuminate Plinto, so I couldn't let on that the rogue was beside me.
"There's 10 minutes left in the bout. Act like you're shocked and don't know what to do. You can feed the tiger. It seems to like your shadows. But meanwhile, fill all your slots with shields. They'll come in handy."
It was incredibly easy to do as Plinto had told me. I really was shocked and had no idea what to do, so I didn't even have to pretend, really. I periodically cast shadows at Kaiten, who went on pacing at the edge of my quicksand, but every time the result was the same. Methodius's cat ate them up with pleasure. At some point, I realized that they were playing with us, like a cat with a ball of yarn. Our opponents were waiting for the last moments of the 15-minute-long bout to prove their might to the entire world. A kill in the last seconds of the bout wasn't just highly esteemed, but pretty lucrative, too, if you made a bet on it ahead of time.
"When we reach the last minute," Plinto whispered, "you'll cancel the quicksand and cast the shields, but only on my command. I'll be in stealth, so you will take all the DPS those two can dish out. We need to survive 1 minute. Don't let them do any damage. Here, take this. It'll come in handy."
Plinto took the tooth of the patriarch from his neck and handed it to me majestically. It was obvious how little he wanted to do this, but the rogue didn't see another way out. I have to admit that our opponents did not behave in the spirit of arena fighters. Kaiten had set up training dummies and was practicing his attacks on them, leveling up one of his stats. Considering that the dummies dodged, twisted, and even tried to parry his blows, it wasn't one of the basic stats either. Methodius, who hadn't managed to find Plinto, sat down near us and began to level up his culinary stat. He made a bonfire, pulled a pot and ingredients out of his bag, and a fairly pleasant scent of cooking began to spread across the arena. Every once in a while, the hunter would cast a mocking glance in our direction, without forgetting to stir the food in the process. The outcome of the bout had been decided in our opponents' minds, so why waste time? Good players never have enough of that resource. Once a minute remained, Kaiten and Methodius took up their positions. Even the tiger hunched, preparing for a leap, and my premonition told me that the 10 meters between us wouldn't pose much of a gap for this monster. Or for the rogue. He'd come flying through in sprint without even noticing the sand.
"They're getting ready."
Plinto was following our opponent's movements.
"At the count of three, get rid of the sand and pour everything you got into defense. 1, 2, now!"
"You have been stunned for 60 seconds. Stun decreased to 2 seconds. Patriarch's tooth. You have been paralyzed for 60 seconds. Paralysis decreased to 2 seconds. Patriarch's tooth. You have been..."
I stood surrounded by utter chaos, watching with astonishment as the hunter's pet was fruitlessly trying to break through the green sphere that had appeared around me. Methodius had become legless, sending arrows flying with such speed that they formed an unbroken line between him and the same green sphere. Kaiten was cursing somewhere behind me, but I didn't feel like turning to look at him. I was much more interested in the following entry in the list of buffs.
"Disruption field. All damage negated for 15 seconds.
In some mysterious way, the rogue had managed to stick a bubble on me, granting me 15 seconds of life. I'd figure out how he got this thing later, and why he'd never mentioned it before. At the moment, I had a much more entertaining affair to attend to. I clenched and unclenched my fists several times, trying to calm my trembling. Let's see how good of a shaman I am. The shields blocked more than 2 million points of damage. I had 8 shields, 45 seconds, and a panel which displayed how much durability each shield had. I had to hold on.
"You have been stunned for 60 seconds. Stun decreased to 2 seconds. Patriarch's tooth. You have been..."
In the last seconds of Plinto's sphere, I ducked, dodging one of the tiger's attacks. He went flying right over my head, growling unhappily in the process, his prey escaping his paws. And yet, At the same moment, Kaiten's daggers began to strike my shield, while a stream of arrows formed a ribbon between Methodius's bow and my head. The shield's durability went plummeting at a terrifying rate. In a few seconds, it had fallen to half. Renewing the protection by 20% durability, I smashed the rogue with my staff. Zero. No, not zero. I had managed to do several points of damage, but that didn't stop Kaiten. He didn't notice anything at all, continuing his terrible dance with his daggers. He had even shut his eyes, submerging into some kind of trance. The rogue was relishing battle with his strength, emotions, and energy. He lived in the battle. He was the battle. He had turned into a true warrior, hypnotizing and demoralizing his opponent. That's okay. We've got plans, too. A new shield appeared around me, and here I forced the rogue to take several steps back, interrupting his deadly dance. I turned into a dragon and simply threw him away from my immense 4-meter-tall torso. Thunderclap. Signed, sealed, delivered. Other people know how to stun their enemies, too. I won exactly 5 seconds, no more. Not even that. I won 5 seconds and took out 1.5 opponents. The tiger didn't have any protection from stun, and turned into a pretty statue. For an entire minute. Kaiten and Methodius simply tossed their heads, regaining their concentration and coming to, after which our dance of death continued. It looked like the Patriarch's Tooth, that Plinto was so proud of, wasn't such a unique item after all. But I couldn't help but be pleased with one thing. I had interrupted the hunter's ability, and now only ordinary arrows were flying in my direction. There were many, and they came in quickly and with lots of force, but they no longer resembled machine gun fire. A shield. Another one. And another one. "Oil, help!" sounded Plinto's shout, and I was suddenly left on my own with the hunter. Kaiten stood quietly beside me, with his dagger in the air, ready to land another blow. Stunned. Plinto, who had left stealth, was sprinting to the other end of the arena while dodging Methodius's arrows. Several blue flashes indicated that the hunter had managed to strike the rogue several times. Yet my shield worked perfectly. I looked at the Patriarch's Tooth with renewed respect. It turns out that our opponents had a one-time way of avoiding stun while the tooth worked constantly. I was happy to admit I was wrong. But the surprising thing was that Plinto didn't bother killing Methodius. He dashed out of the arrow's range and began to watch as the level 400-plus player turned on poor little me. A shield. A sudden silence descended on everything. I opened my eyes, wearily, interrupting the casting of another shield, and almost started. Right in front of me hovered an arrow, a green venom oozing from its barbed point. The shaft was fluttering like a fish pulled out to land, thirsting to continue its flight and impale itself into the detested shield and shatter it. But this was no longer destined to be. "Time's up!" The announcer's voice ended the silence. "Team Kaiten Methodius has done 0 points of damage. Team Mayan Plinto has done 32 points of damage. The victor has been determined."
"Mayan and Plinto are victorious. New challenge received."
I collapsed, exhausted, to the arena floor and began to giggle hysterically. We did it! We were the best! We won by doing a mere 32 points of damage, while my total HP amounted to several hundred thousand. We... "Give me the tooth back," Plinto deadpanned, as if we hadn't just bested the deadliest duo in the game. He stepped over to me calmly and held out his hand.
You've played with it long enough.
Neither a gesture nor a word from the rogue suggested any joy at winning the bout, and yet the speed with which he put on the tooth and his sigh of relief, small but notable, suggested that this person had nerves too. I had only one explanation for what was going on. In 15 minutes we were due to fight our last bout, and Plinto didn't want to lose his concentration. Agreed. If we let our victory go to our heads, we might accidentally lose through sheer carelessness. We could celebrate later.
May the strongest among you triumph!
The fifth duo seeking the incredible jackpot turned out to be a duo of warriors. Choosing a restriction of level 200, they decided to throw us off guard with dodges and feints that would make it difficult for us to target and focus them. Silly rabbits. Quicksand, thunderclap, cancel quicksand.
Hold on, Plinto!
I managed to yell before the rogue fell upon the warriors.
Not like that!
Not like what?
Utter bafflement sounded in Plinto's voice.
What? Do you want to duke it out with them one-on-one?
You misunderstood me. I hurried to calm my partner. What if he decides that I lost my mind a bit during the last bout and haven't recovered from it yet? I quickly produced the 10 fireworks I had in my bag and showed them to Plinto.
We have this lovely little trick at our disposal. Let's see how it works. What do you say?
Monsieur knows how to get his kicks.
A cruel smirk appeared on Plinto's face.
You take the one on the right. Want to bet whose flies up higher?
A combatant has left the arena and his team is disqualified. Team Mayan Plinto are victorious. New property acquired. The Citadel of the Solar Wind. Level 34.
Good day, Master Mayan.
As soon as the bout ended, a semi-transparent creature that resembled at once a monkey, a person, and God knows what else, appeared before us. It took several more words for me to understand that I was looking at the celestial equivalent of the Herald, or, as they like to say in those climes, a Rahaji.
Allow me to congratulate you on your new marvelous castle. I have been sent by the Emperor to collect taxes on your new property. Taking into account the geopolitical position of the castle, the owner's relationship to your clan, as well as the level of the castle, the amount adds up to 68 million gold, 2 million for each level. There are two methods of payment, a one-time sum subject to a 5% discount, or a monthly payment. Which of these methods do you prefer? If you are unable to make payment,
the Rahaji went on, accurately apprising my confusion as an unwillingness to part with such an immense sum. Thanks to our arena wagers, I had the money, but I saw no point in maintaining a castle in enemy territory. I couldn't ensure an adequate defense for the castle, which would allow just about anyone to raise my property from level 34 to level 1, making me lose 60 million in the process. Stacy would not look kindly on such expenditures of the family savings.
Or you do not wish to do so, you will be granted a stay of 2 months, during which you can sell the castle at auction. No one wishes to compel you to do anything. The castle will be sold, and you will receive half of the proceeds. Everything is quite simple, transparent, and lawful. Please make your decision.
Can the castle be transported to our continent?
Plinto came to my aid.
The answer is a negative, Master Plinto the Bloodied,
the Rahaji answered with a bow, unfazed by the rogue's lack of tact.
This castle does not have a means of teleportation.
Does that mean that other castles do?
I am not authorized to discuss this question. My goal is to determine whether Master Mayan will take ownership of his property, or whether he prefers to put the castle up for auction.
Can I make this decision a little later? I inquired, wishing to discuss this with Stacy. Maybe the solar wind would come in handy.
I'm sorry, the Rahaji shook his head negatively. If I do not receive an answer in 5 minutes, the castle will be sent to auction. Such are the rules, Master Mayan. See clause.
If I take ownership of the castle, can I have a moving service move everything in it to Altamira? A cute idea suddenly occurred to me. Any further growth for Altamira had to be affected through its decorations, which I didn't want to waste my time and resources on. However, if I had a level 34 castle at my disposal, then no one could keep me from plundering it as much as I liked. If I set up an auction, the castle will go straight back to Bayan, who will buy it for a few gold.
Like hell. I would take the castle apart piece by piece and stuff my vaults full of imperial stone and oak. Loot's loot, after all. Of course, such a service is available, the Rahaji replied. The price is equivalent to 2% of the cost of the transported materials, but no more than 10 million. Have you made your decision?
I have. I will take the castle. Please withdraw the money from my personal account.
The hell do you need that castle for?
Plinto frowned as soon as we left on our own. Indicating that I'd answer him when I got the chance, I got out an amulet and dialed Stacy.
Stacy, listen.
You won! Danny, you won!
The torrent of joy emanating from the amulet forced me to smile. Pleasing a wonderful woman is always nice, and when that woman is your wife, it's twice as nice.
Hang on, Stacy. We can talk about it at home. I have Plinto here. I have a favor to ask. I need to demolish the solar wind. Will you arrange it?
I'm all attention.
The joy and happiness vanished in an instant. I was speaking to a veteran of all sorts of intrigues, ready to set out against her foe yet again.
Yeah! Woo! That's him!
Roared a huge crowd of players as soon as we stepped out of the arena. I raised my eyebrows in surprise. The sea of players reached to the walls of Altamira. It was as though the players of the entire continent had assembled here and were trying to out-yell each other. Above the players' heads, I could see a projection of myself peering with shock into the distance. The mages had provided a view of the action to the distant parts of the crowd. The guards were instilling some sense of order, forming passages in this sea of people and allowing the players to move among the buildings. Yet beyond the passages, an utter hell reigned. This was a terrifying mob.
"You managed to surprise me."
Garenika appeared beside me. Looking at the monstrous crowd, he smirked and pointed at the players.
"Do you still insist that they aren't a herd of sheep, roaring, screaming, seeking revelation from their herd leader?
A revolting mass of flesh. Who would call this creature a sentient? Guernica made a motion, and the projection of a mad, raving, hollering orc appeared several feet before us. The name above his head suggested that I was looking at a player, but his behavior made me have my doubts. The orc was shaking his head like there were voices in it. He was screaming, waving his arms in the air, sputtering with spit, and yet the scariest part of him were his eyes. They were insane.
Only a sheep in a herd would consider being near its herd leader the highest blessing, only so it could later tell its children about this epic moment. You can be proud. This will be remembered for years to come. Beasts.
I had nothing to say to Guernica's pronouncements. On the one hand, I couldn't permit an NPC to insult living players, and yet on the other, the projection Guernica had shown me was worth more than 1,000 words. It really was quite a stretch to call these creatures humans. It was as if they had won in the arena instead of Plinto and I. Of course, it was possible that the rioting players had won a lot of money in the betting, but even that didn't justify the way they were behaving. Rational people don't behave this way.
It's time for us to go.
Guernica offered his hand without waiting for my reply.
The Pryke copper mine awaits.
Plinto, launch Altamita and give this amulet to Stacy. I handed the communications device to the rogue beside me.
Launch?
I heard Guernica's surprised question before the world around me turned into roiling fog. This jump didn't resemble teleportation. There had been no portal, shimmering or otherwise. Instead, a loading bar appeared, which, in Barleona, indicates that the location you're headed to has never been visited before and is being loaded for the first time. Does this mean that the mines aren't on the main game servers? That can't be. My creation of the Orc Warriors from the Commandant chess set had been announced to the entire game world. What's going on here?
I will wait for you here, boomed Guernica,
when the world around me came back into existence. The Lord of Shadow folded his arms across his chest, proudly raised his head, and turned into a statue of the captain of some ancient ship, headed straight into the storm. No one and nothing could distract this captain, least of all the squad of orc guards pointing their pikes at us. The NPC's faces betrayed such deep revulsion that I, too, adopted my most implacable face. I wasn't about to get emotional in front of some imitators of the penitentiary system. The system had had 3 months to see plenty of my emotions as it stood. Enough.
The boss is expecting you, minion of shadow.
One of the guards seethed with difficulty. Tension filled the air around us. I was hated, purely, openly, and wholeheartedly. You know, I was even enjoying this. I was tired of being a goody-two-shoes.
"Just give me a reason,"
the guard frothed, prodding me with his pike in the back. In my view, this is going too far. Whatever feelings the devs had coded into the NPC, there should always be a clear line between the game world and how the player feels in it. When the game starts causing discomfort, it ceases being a game. People don't submerge themselves in Barleona for this.
They have enough troubles in the real world. I didn't come here to play some two-bit part, I yelled up into the sky, knowing full well that the game's moderators were watching my every word and movement. A player couldn't just wander into the mines just like that. I request that you disable this physical coercion. My presence here has been approved by the administrators. To be honest, I didn't really expect someone to be listening to me, much less a response. My 3 months in the mines had dispelled any rosy conceptions I had about this camp among the cliffs, but the desire for justice triumphed over logic and reason. I'm not here to feel this NPC's hatred on my own body. We reached the administration facilities without further incident. All of the convicts were in the mine. The guards were there, too, and I only tarried a bit at the smithy. However, instead of Rhine, that whimsical gnome, I found a world-weary dwarf at the forge. A practically square torso, arms the girth of my legs, a terrible scar cleft half of his face in half, and passed through where the dwarf's right eye had been. Watery gray hair, sooty chain mail. This creature bore no resemblance to Rhine. Our eyes met. The dwarf frowned like he'd seen a heap of manure, spat, and went on hammering the ingot on his anvil, having expelled me from his thoughts. "Where's Rhine?" I asked the guard escorting me. It took a few moments to understand that no answer would be forthcoming. The guard merely smirked and indicated the administration building with his pike. We headed in that direction. When I get to the bottom of all my other problems, I'll need to figure out what had happened to this NPC. If he hadn't been erased, which was unlikely since he had a granddaughter and therefore a concrete history in the game's lore, I'll need to recruit the gnome to work for me. Smiths of his abilities don't grow on trees. The mine governor's office hadn't changed much. The same elegant statues, paintings on the walls, a large crystal chandelier, carpets, carved wood, and a light breeze. The only difference was that instead of 2-meter-tall Pronto, the seat behind the desk was occupied by a dwarf, a new anonymous governor of Pryke Coppermine.
"Your request was examined and approved," the dwarf said in a calm, businesslike tone, offering me a seat in one of the armchairs. Had my yelling really had an effect?
"Prisoner Aizu shall be brought here in a minute. Would you like some water?"
I won't say no. A copper mug with water appeared on the desk, the handiwork of one of the local craftsmen, dressed in a striped shirt. "Permit me a question? Earlier, a gnome named Rhine worked in the smithy. Where is he now?"
"How do you know him?"
The governor tensed up, notably, as if my question had been taboo. I had to respond honestly, without hiding anything. "I, too, was a prisoner here just over a year ago. Rhine helped me set out on the way of the Creator. I wanted to speak to him and say thank you, but was surprised to see that he wasn't at his customary place. Has something happened to him?"
"He has retired," the dwarf replied, sighing with ease. "He returned to his family."
"How could I—"
"We do not issue the contact information of our former employees to former prisoners," the governor interrupted. "Please make your inquiries with the heralds. This issue falls under their jurisdiction. The person you wished to speak to, you have half an hour."
The door opened. An old man shuffled slowly into the office. I gulped. I had seen Do Not Punic, or Donald Izu, as he was called in real life, in court, but over the last few months he had aged a great deal, a very great deal. Given that a convict's avatar reflects what he looks like exactly in real life, Don had aged by about 40 years, if not more. The only thing that remained of the old Do Not Punic were his eyes, sharp, piercing, intelligent, and filled with astonishment. I suppose I was the last person that Do Not Punic expected to see in the governor's office.
"Mayen," he nodded, sitting down across from me. "Judging by your lack of a robe, you're here to ask me questions. Get on with it."
"What about, I hate you, and you damn bastard, and I hope you die?" I couldn't keep from asking. The man before me had ordered that I be drowned in my capsule, so I didn't feel much sympathy for him.
"Did you not come for that?"
Do Not Punic smiled grimly. "No, I need information."
"What kind?"
Do Not Punic even looked surprised.
"They pumped me for everything I knew, and even what I didn't know. A full memory scan. That's nothing to smirk at."
"They only recovered what you remember. I'm looking for your thoughts at the moment." I barely kept myself from swearing. Alex hadn't said anything about scanning Do Not Punic through and through. If I recall the law correctly, and I recall it very well, memory scans had to be approved by the president, personally. No one else had the power to order the extraction of a person's memories from their mind. Human rights activists kept a particularly close eye on this kind of thing. All of Barleona was built on the principle that memory could not be extracted. An example could be Cart, who refused to give up his corrupt boss. It was easier for the legal system to imprison someone for 10 years than pull evidence out of their head.
"So, it's like that. What kind of thoughts would you like, then, buddy?"
"Marina. Tell me about her."
"Marina? What do you need her for?"
the old man asked, surprised, but went on.
"An ordinary operator. She had several objectives. The first was to assemble a database of potential candidates. The second was to draw them into the game. The third was to arrange their exit into the wider game world. The fourth was to communicate with our people in the corporation. She made no decisions. Are you here because of her?"
"Yes." "Did you meet her out in reality?"
"Of course. Every week."
"Is this her?" I brought up a photo of Roxanne and showed it to the old man. Alex refused to allow me to do this for a long time, but my ironclad reasoning proved convincing. "I feel like this is the right thing to do." He didn't find any counter-arguments to this, so he agreed, waving his hand and muttering,
"Do whatever you feel like." "Yes?"
Do Not Punic looked me in the eyes, piercingly.
"I personally ordered her termination. The results were demonstrated to me. Is there something I don't know?"
"That is precisely why I'm here. Marina, the freelancer whom you hired, actually looks like this." I brought up another photo and showed it to Do Not Punic.
"Go on."
"The girl you call Marina actually has a much less typical name.
Roxanne Vecchi. The first photograph is her. Here is what I've managed to learn so far. I related the story of my search for the truth and my meeting with corporation officials.
"Well, oh, well," Dunant
Punic muttered, staring into the window pensively.
"So, you've come to ask how I met her to begin with, correct?"
"Yes. Memories only record the fact of what happened, without thoughts, feelings, or emotions. And those are exactly what I need at the moment. Where did Marina come from?" Slowly, as though unwillingly, Dunant Punic began to tell his tale. I'll admit that it's difficult to recollect your own defeat, but I wasn't too worried about the old man's suffering. I needed to get at the truth. As I had guessed, Marina hadn't been found by posting an announcement in the classifieds. She had been recommended by one of her partners, to whom the old man had turned for help. An Eastern partner. Bayan. The girl was vetted, but the check didn't turn up any flags. Marina existed in all the databases, behaved entirely properly without raising any doubts, and she really did look like the woman in the first photograph. Through her enthusiasm and emotions, Marina became one of the crew, within a few months, taking on especially sensitive assignments and completing them with astounding accuracy and cruelty. You need to send 10 innocent people to prison? No problem. Marina ingratiated herself with the victims, seduced them, and forced them to perform some act of folly— hack the water management system, steal a painting, fight some juveniles, and break one of their arms. The variations were diverse, but the outcome was the same. Everyone ended up in Barleona. Dunant Punic's brain trust agreed on 8 candidates supplied by Marina and set in motion a grand game that resulted in my terrible defeat.
"So you weren't the one who selected us?" I asked, surprised. "No. I approved the selection, but she was the one making the recommendation. Although, you know, you've forced me to re-examine those events from a different point of view. Here's what else I have to tell you."
The conspirators held daily meetings to discuss their plot and make decisions about its progress. At some point in time, this group was pared down to 3 people: Dunant Punic, Hellfire, and Marina. And yet the main ideologue, the one who set the main goals, wasn't the old man. It was Marina. Dunant Punic even grabbed his head when he reviewed a typical meeting in his mind. Marina would propose the options. These were discussed, and the decision that was made was generally the one the girl had preferred to begin with, not the one Dunant Punic would have chosen. Marina had manipulated the entire process. The only decision that the old man had made on his own was to terminate the operator when the game had reached its conclusion.
"That's even among the scanned information."
The Don glared at me with wide-open eyes full of surprise.
"The decision to terminate you was hers. We never wanted to kill anyone. It was only later, when I understood that you're in virtual space, I panicked and ordered your termination. Mayan, we were manipulated."
The old man jumped up from his chair and started pacing back and forth.
"I know that our conversation is being monitored. Otherwise, Mayan wouldn't have been allowed to visit me. Check, Roxanne. If Mayan is correct, the true mastermind is still free. Bayan recommended Marina, but only after I asked him myself. He gave me several choices to choose from, so I don't think that he's the one behind all this. He was trying to destroy Phoenix. The only person who ended up winning after everything was over and done with was... Time's up.
The governor's office dissolved around me, and I found myself beside Guernica. He was still playing his role of a statue. Even his clothes didn't move in the breeze that blew through the mine ceaselessly. Only his eyes, carefully studying me even now, let me know that this statue was a living one.
"Are you satisfied?" Guernica boomed.
"Entirely." I still couldn't calm myself after Do Not Punic's outburst. He hadn't had time to tell me the name, but I didn't need that either. I knew the name very well. The man who had won everything after the entire plot. The name was on the tip of my tongue and wanted to be uttered, but I refused to do so, despite all the logic to the opposite. This is just emotions and assumptions. This person wouldn't risk everything over the chance of a profit. Or would he?
Chapter 14. The Tomb of the Creator.
"I hope you know what you're doing,"
Guernica remarked, examining Altamita's new environs. On the one side, a dark blue sea spread itself beside the castle. It was almost purple. The waves came running onto the shore and burst into a wall of spray as they crashed against an unexpected obstacle. The walls of my castle. The moat, which was ordinarily half empty, filled with seawater, and, as I looked on, a pair of crocodiles swimming in the moat turned into terrible monsters, some kind of octopus and crab hybrid. I shuddered. Despite my sensory filter, I felt a chill, as if the bone-chilling sea breeze had found a way from this virtual world into the real world my body was in. On the other side of the castle, an endless plain stretched far into the horizon. There was neither a tree, nor a bush, nor even a stone to be seen in its expanse. Nothing but withered, yellow grass found the strength to stand up to the harsh climate of our continent's far north, filling the steppe with itself. But even that wasn't enough to fill the desolate gray landscape. There were neither seagulls, nor animals, nor people. There was no one.
"Everything's dead here,"
I whispered with astonishment, suddenly sensing the utter emptiness of the space around me.
"When I at last get my way, the entire world will be like this,"
Guernica replied salaciously, breathing in deeply and with evident pleasure.
"All life shall be destroyed."
I glanced at the Lord of Shadow from beneath my brow. Lately, I've started to forget that he is the doom of all life in Barleona. The goal of this NPC, despite his seeming normalcy, is the annihilation of all life, and one of my goals, as a player, is to keep him from reaching that goal.
"Is this why you want to help me reach the tomb?" I gasped.
"Mayan, soon enough you will have no choice but to become my trustworthy ally. I can juxtapose facts and make inferences as well as you. You were in Erebus. You have a flying ship.
I know what is located not far from this location. I imagine that you know that, too. If you do what you're thinking of, there won't be a single empire that will have you. Ever again. You will be enemy number one from now until the end of time. Every sentient creature in this world will hunt you. And that is precisely why I said, I hope you know what you're doing. I will always welcome a warrior like you.
Two warriors, Garenika, two.
Anastaria joined us.
I go where my husband goes. Until the end of time.
In that case, best of luck to you. For an instant, an expression of sadness flashed across Garenika's face, immediately giving way to his customary smirk. Then the Lord of Shadow vanished, without any sound or portal or other bells and whistles. I'll need to learn that trick.
How's Don?
Stacy dropped what seemed like a neutral question, but I could tell she could barely contain her agitation.
Did you find out anything?
Bayan. So long as I lacked ironclad proof, I decided not to lay all my cards on the table before my spouse. He recommended Marina, and I'm sure that Alex is following up as we speak. We need to figure out why the Celestial Empire needs this.
To eliminate an opponent, Stacy exclaimed, unable to contain her emotions. Phoenix has been at their throat for a long time, and using a third party to destroy them is exactly how the East prefers to achieve its goals.
Let's see what Alex comes up with. I'm sure he'll share whatever it is. He can't not. We'll make our conclusions then. I hugged Anastaria. We don't have a lot of time. We need to go.
I always imagined that there wasn't anything north of our continent,
muttered Stacy, frowning from the frigid wind. The gas struggled against the snowstorm, stubbornly moving forward. The airship had somehow gained a level during its extermination of the players, so our ETA turned out to be 5 hours instead of the original 6. We were standing at the bow of the ship, staring ahead and trying to see anything at all in the blizzard raging around us. The odd patch of ice, gaps of dark blue water with a violet hue, but other than that, a white wall of snow before us. Nothing more. In order to dispel the frostbite debuff, I kept having to cast a healing shadow on myself again and again, as well as at Stacy and Noom, who flat out refused to abandon his creation. Judging by the constantly falling temperature, soon enough, all I'll be doing is healing, since we hadn't brought any warm clothes with us, while mailboxes didn't work outside of the continent's limits. The hastiness with which we had arranged this operation was making itself felt.
"There shouldn't be anything here,"
I replied, congratulating myself for the foresight of arranging a lover's pendant for us. We could communicate telepathically again. As slight as it was some victory over the system that lately seemed stacked against us.
"I know. But even then, it's still a little too empty here. Why create a giant location without a single sign of life in it? It's a bit too wasteful, even for the corporation, and..."
"Living, warm, delicious."
A sinister whisper drowned out both Stacy's thought and the howling wind. The gas shook noticeably as 3 enormous, fog-shrouded shadows crashed onto the deck.
At the same time, the ship's protective force field popped, as if it had been made from glass instead of magical energy. The foggy monsters reared up on three legs, spread their flaming wings, and turned into 3-meter-tall, red-eyed demons, seething with shadows.
"Food!"
they yelled in unison, raising their hands, or paws, or whatever it is that demons have, and thick shadow snakes began to wind in our direction from their claws. Stacy immediately cast a bubble on herself, while Noom put on some defense of his own, preparing for battle. I should have thrown up a shield, too, and prepared to fight this new incarnation of evil, but I shrugged off all logic and surrendered to my premonition. The arena was behind us. The continent was behind us. Everything was behind us. All limitations, all borders. I had had it. The shaman has three hands.
Halt!
I took several steps forward and made the summons, pouring all of my anger, all of my hate, all of my hurt into it. All of the negative feelings I had amassed recently. The corporation, the players, Do Not Panic and his suspicions, Marina, Roxanne, Bayan and his gang, the arena. I had amassed so many emotions that I was going to lose control one way or another. In this sense, the demon's appearance was actually quite propitious. For about the first time in my career as a shaman, I summoned the elementals. 3 shadow elementals, 1 for each demon. Judging by Noom's stunned gasp, the effect was spectacular. The gas shuddered again when 3 boulders, shrouded in green fog, plummeted onto the deck and instantly turned into stone defenders.
"We are allies!"
I barked quite convincingly. I didn't know that I could yell like a demon. The demons froze in astonishment, as if they'd seen a ghost. Although, I suppose you couldn't scare these creatures with any old ghost. The roiling snakes evaporated, melting away into the snowstorm, and one of the demons took a step forward.
"You are not the Keymaster. Who are you?"
"I am his messenger." It sounded like these NPCs were expecting someone, so I had better play along.
We were sent to check your preparedness," Stacy interrupted, stepping up beside me.
I looked at the girl and almost lost it. The paladin's entire body was shrouded with fog. The typically glinting golden armor was covered with patches of fog which roiled along the armor against all laws of physics. It was as if the armor wasn't made from imperial steel, but from liquid that had in some miraculous way acquired solidity. And yet, what was especially stunning were her eyes. The girl's normally hazel eyes were glowing with a red flame, as if she were an aggroing mob. I hadn't the strength to look on to these 2 embers, and so I looked away, glanced at my hands, and gulped. There wasn't much difference between me and Stacy. The same seeping fog, the strange armor, and, I was certain of it, the red eyes. We had turned into true warriors of shadow.
"The Keymaster is worried about the state of the world," Stacy went on. "He sent us to launch the Annihilator in order to distract the free citizens."
"The Annihilator still has 2 years to charge," boomed the demon.
"We need it now. Otherwise our plan will be imperiled," I replied implacably, deciding to bluff. Something was telling me that this would work. Are you really prepared to anger the vicegerent?
The Annihilator shall be ready in an hour.
As soon as I spoke the magic word, the demons did an about-face.